You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton.
Episode 107, A 4K TV Mess. This week on the podcast, as the title suggests, is 4K TV a mess? Let's start with the Apple 4K TV, a largely expensive media box that is, on average, twice as much as competing products. For decades, consumers have been used to paying a premium for Apple products, and they've largely been okay with it. But TV is a different and unique market. Can the Apple TV stand the test of time at its $150 plus price range? There's no way to know for certain, but gosh, it's difficult to think it could. And what gives with the 4K content promised to us? Is a tipping point coming soon where we can largely rely on a 4K version of our favorite movie or TV show, much like how the Blu-ray format has now become? And lastly, we begin by wetting your palate with the release of the Super Nintendo Entertainment System Classic. Yes, that's right, it's back in an albeit miniaturized form factor. Stay tuned for that discussion and more. That's coming up next on The Impromptu.
Well, it's been an interesting week for Nintendo, releasing their Nostalgia Box, latest Nostalgia Box.
That's the official name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Super NES Classic, a tiny itty bitty Super NES that is basically a fancy shell around what amounts to a Raspberry Pi running an emulator.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got authentic Super NES controllers that use the Wiimote's connection dongle, like the one that kind of clips in and then you press on both sides to eject it. It's using that plug. But the controller itself, it feels like the original Super NES controller. They've got the concave XY buttons and the convex AB buttons. Like, it's all the same. The plastic feels the same. The colors are the same.
Is it weighted about the same
yeah.
as the original? So they're really trying to replicate the original feel.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it comes preloaded with a ton of games. Like, even just the RPGs that they've loaded on this thing would be enough to play it forever. You've got Earthbound, Super Mario RPG, Legend of Mana, Final Fantasy III, which was Final Fantasy VI in Japan, but when it came out on Super NES in the States, it was Final Fantasy III. But, yeah. So, I mean, with just that, that's like hundreds of hours of gameplay right there. And then on top of that, you've got Super Mario World, Super Metroid, Star Fox, the unreleased Star Fox 2 that was scrapped just before it was released, so that they could focus on Star Fox 64.
Yeah.
It's actually quite an interesting game. They had this dynamic world map that would shift depending on what you did. And you had to like protect Corneria against these incoming missiles, and you'd have to fly different missions and stuff. It added this kind of tactical aspect to the game that's really interesting. But yeah, it was basically 98% done before they scrapped it. There have been kind of bad ports of it floating around on the internet, but this is the first time that they've ever released the completed game for all intents and purposes. Of course, people have already ripped it off of the Super NES Classic and it's out on the internet. So mm-hmm. you don't necessarily have to buy this device anymore.
But I guess, this console is going to make all but the most diehard fans happy, right? Because
yeah.
there's the argument that, well, it's not as good as the original if you can't play every single game in the library. But realistically,
99% of your time is on new consoles. You're not going to be playing old games that often.
Well, yeah. Like, I think the reason these are so popular is because it just gives you this nice little microcosm of what made those consoles amazing. Like, when you remember playing Super NES, you don't remember playing, like, all the titles that people don't remember. You remember playing F-Zero. You remember playing the first Mario Kart. You remember playing Super Mario World. Like, all of those games, those are the most indelible memories of playing on the Super Nintendo. So, I mean, this device basically collects all of that into one little thing. You spend $100 and you've just got this tiny little thing that you can replay all of those games anytime you want. And it's self-contained. You don't need to worry about the games expiring or the online platform going offline and you can't re-download them. Like, the device is the device. And as long as it works, you've got access to those games. So it's like holding a little piece of your own gaming history. The Super Nintendo was the first console I ever owned. So, I mean, being able to play those games again is really cool. Like, I remember the first time I played Star Fox and how cool I thought that was. And then I played it again the other day to unlock Star Fox 2. And looking at it now, it looks so bad, but the gameplay is still so solid after all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, really, that more than anything is a testament to why we play Nintendo games and why we buy Nintendo consoles. Like, everything they do is just so solid. And looking forward now to Mario Odyssey, which comes out at the end of this month, I mean, you kind of see that through line where they've always made these amazing games on these unique consoles that kind of transcend time. And I mean, that's why these vintage consoles are so popular. Obviously, there's a huge supply drought. Like, Nintendo never makes enough of these things, ever. The NES Classic last year was a perfect example. That thing sold out in 5 seconds and it's nowhere. Like, you cannot get one of those anymore. They were a lot better for this run. There seemed to be way more of them, and they are planning on making batches of them all the way through to Christmas. And then early next year, they're going to re-release the NES Classic again. Like, they're going to make more units. So there will be another opportunity to get that one. So I think pretty much anybody that wants to get one probably will be able to. So, I mean, they have improved in that respect. There were a lot of people, myself included, that weren't able to get the NES Classic last year. Yeah, and it's a neat little thing, and it's kind of the perfect snapshot of everything that made each of those consoles great. Like, it might be missing your personal favorite game, but I think it's a pretty good cross-section of the best games of that platform. I also think moving forward, like, for them to do an N64 classic, that'd be really complex. That'd be really difficult for them. Like, you would need something a lot beefier to do N64 emulation, and not to mention all the additional hard drive space. Like, you would need a way bigger flash memory to store all of those ROMs. Because I think for an N64 classic, you would need at least Super Mario 64, if they're able to get approval from Rare, Perfect Dark would be or was Perfect Dark on GameCube? No, it was N64. Damn it, I have no idea. If it was and they get Rare's approval, it could be on there. But no, when I think N64, I think Mario 64, I think Diddy Kong Racing.
Right, that's a classic.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, Mario Kart 64, Super Smash Brothers, the original one, Ocarina of Time.
So there's lots of good ones.
Majora's Mask.
Either way.
Yeah.
So how much is this thing selling for?
So it's $100.
So it's like, relatively inexpensive.
Yeah. Like it's not bad. It's a small price to pay to get that chunk of the past, especially if you're really nostalgic for it. Yeah. So Super NES Classic, you may be able to get one. Keep an eye out if you haven't gotten one already. They should be restocking periodically between now and Christmas. So moving on, more product announcements, this time from Amazon. We were introduced to a new Amazon Echo, a new Amazon Echo Plus, a new Fire TV, and a really interesting new, it's kind of like an Echo. I forget what it's called, but it's kind of like a cross between the Echo View and an Echo. It's this tiny little round display that looks kind of like an alarm clock. And it's supposed to sit on your nightstand and act as kind of a mini, like it's basically designed to replace your alarm clock, and it has full access to Alexa and everything. The new Echo has much better speakers, much better microphones. The cheaper model, I think, doesn't have all of those improvements, but it does have swappable covers, kind of like Google Home. So there's like a bunch of options. There's some wood finishes that look kind of fake. Some fabric finishes that look pretty good, but also seem like a bit of a ripoff of the upcoming Apple HomePod. And then there's the Echo Pro, which has super advanced microphones and speakers. Still looks like the original Echo for some reason, and costs slightly more. It can also act as a home hub. So they're basically starting to go after Apple's whole thing with HomeKit by saying, if you get an Echo Pro, it can act as a hub for your smart home as well. Only they're using open technologies like Zigbee and the other one, B-Wave, Z-Wave, something, whatever the other one is. So they're supporting both, and it'll be able to just manage all of those devices by itself. And if you have one connected to your home, it'll be able to do the same thing as HomeKit, where if you're away from home, you can actually ask Alexa to turn your lights on, and it'll route that command through the Echo Pro. But yeah, that costs more. It's about the price of a Google Home. I think it's like $169, $179 US. The new cheaper Echo is $69 US, and you can get a 3-pack for slightly cheaper than the price of buying 3 individually would be. Oh, wait, no, sorry. The Echo is $99. The new Fire TV is $69. And then a 3-pack of Echoes is $250 US. So it's a little cheaper. So then the Fire TV, $69. It is able to play 4K HDR. And Apple should be pretty concerned about that, because they announced a 4K HDR box that's over $200.
But Apple has never been concerned about being the least expensive. They've never really cared about competitors being more affordable than their own products.
But that's because a lot of Apple's products have a better value proposition than the competition. You're buying an iPhone because it's an iPhone. It doesn't matter how much it costs, per se. You're buying an iPhone because of what it offers. An Apple TV, however, the only thing it has going for it is iTunes.
Right, the content deals.
Without iTunes, you're just buying something to watch Netflix.
Right.
And if you just need something to watch Netflix, you're not buying an Apple TV.
I absolutely agree with you.
You're buying a Roku, you're buying a Chromecast, you're going to get the new Amazon Fire TV. You're not going to get the $200 Apple TV. You're going to get something cheap to just watch Netflix on. So Yeah, Amazon is severely undercutting Apple with this device because they're offering Netflix, a bunch of other things, and of course Amazon Prime Video, which has not yet made it to the tvOS store. It will at some mystery date in the near future.
It's not just Amazon undercutting Apple here. I mean, no. What about all the other devices on the market? There's the Roku, the Chromecast. Those are all sub $100 products.
Exactly. And Apple has put themselves at a severe disadvantage here because, sure, it's all well and good that the Apple TV has an iPad Pro chip in it, blah, blah. It's super fast. But none of that is necessary. Like, if they were pushing to make the Apple TV a proper game console, I could understand that.
Yeah.
But historically and up to the current event that they had, they've made no indication that they support gaming or are able to support gaming. They just kind of allow it on their platform. They haven't nurtured it or done anything to really foster that kind of content. And if it's not being positioned as a game console, well, then it's not really worth getting that level of performance because you don't need it. You just need something that can load Netflix and play back 4K video.
Yeah, I mean, for me, most of the stuff that I watch is on Netflix, right? And I don't buy stuff off of iTunes. So really, there's not that much incentive for me. The value proposition really isn't that high on that product for me.
Yeah.
As much as I love Apple, I mean, $200, I mean,
this is where they're really letting down the customer base. And John Gruber agrees with this. He had a whole post about it the other day where he basically said Apple is being foolish by not lowering the price of the Apple TV to compete with these products.
Yeah.
Like, sure, you have the new one at the high end with this high price, but they didn't even lower the price on the existing 1080p Apple TV. They slashed one of the storage tiers and they kept the price the same on the 32 gig so that you'd be more tempted to buy the 4K model, which is only slightly more.
Yeah, the 1080, I don't know what price they could have priced the older one at that would make anyone happy, because now by default any new media box that you buy is 4K capable pretty much. Actually that's not exactly true, because Roku has non-4K models of their devices for like $40,
and there's still
but you
a
can
non-
get into 4K a 4K Roku for about I think $70 or $80.
Yeah.
So,
and the Chromecast Ultra is about that much.
Now, granted, the Apple TV, even the base model, does have a lot of onboard storage in comparison to those devices, because the Apple TV has some different use cases.
But that's for apps and for iTunes content.
Exactly. Apple would have had to change the price of the 1080p model to $80 or something.
Yeah.
And I actually read that Grube article, and I do agree with you. I think he made a lot of good points. I do think that the Apple TV is overpriced. For the first time, a product that Apple has released, I really do believe that this is overpriced. And, you know, he made comments about how a lot of people look at Apple's other products, like a MacBook Pro, and realize they could get a cheaper PC, but they understand the premium and they understand the value of it. And a lot of times they'll still go with the MacBook. But for the first time in this market, because the TV market is so different, that I think people are having a real tough time swallowing that price tag that they've priced it at.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, Apple, of course, can change the price at any time that they want. But whether or not they're going to do that, I don't know. I do think it'll have to come down quite a bit, though. I think I can't see Apple, to be honest. I can't see them lowering the price of the 4K model to sub $100. I just don't think they're going to do that because they're going to internally they wouldn't be able to justify because of the cost of that high end CPU in there. I don't know what the bill
the 4K model, sure, but
yeah, for the 4K model,
the 1080p one has like an A7 or an A8 in it. Like, it's not new hardware.
Yeah, that's true. I think for the 32 gig models, to be honest with you, the way I would price it, not knowing, of course, this is just an ideal, not knowing the cost of the materials that go in, but the 1080p model, I would price that at $69, and the 4K model, I would price at no more than $120.
Yeah, $129.
Or $129, something like that. Past that, I mean, you're getting into kind of insane pricing territory.
Yeah, I think the 1080p, they could anchor at the sub 100. They could do like 99 for the 1080p one. I think that'd be pretty fair considering it has 32 gigs of storage in it.
Yeah.
And then for they could do a new 32 gig 4K tier starting at, let's say, 169.
But you know what? Why don't they introduce another version of the Apple TV? So you have a third tier. You've got 4K, 1080p, and then introduce a sub $100 version that doesn't have that flash storage and doesn't have the ability to play games. Because then somebody could at least get into the ecosystem for real cheap. I mean, that seems so obvious.
Like kind of the Windows 10S of tvOS, like where it just has preloaded apps plus Netflix plus whatever
because
else.
Onboard flash, everyone knows NAND storage is expensive and prices have gone up recently. So why not just get rid of that for the most part?
They'd still have to have some onboard storage, but they could do like...
they don't need 32 gigs of it.
They could do like an 8 gig model and then be like, okay, you can only install these apps that we... have approved.
The pre-installed apps are fine. The streaming apps.
Yeah.
Like nothing that you can actually physically download stuff to the device.
Well.
Really.
I think you still offer the app store, but make it very clear that they can only get so many apps on it. Like basically position it as.
Right.
This is for grabbing streaming apps and streaming video only. Yeah.
Or they could even say something like, you know, for the most part, this is a streaming box, but if you rent or buy a movie off of iTunes, you know how it gives you the option. I think it gives you an option to download it in advance. So maybe you could say, well, it has enough storage so you can, at least if you rent one movie, you can download, you can keep one movie downloaded offline in case you don't want to waste your, you know, stream it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that would be a lot more beneficial for people because... people aren't like downloading movies anymore. They're not like, they don't want to hold on to that data. They just want to stream stuff. So, I mean, for a media box, you don't really need all of that space. Like, I think an 8 or 16 gig model would do quite well.
Yeah.
Especially if the price point is right, because then you're basically saying this is for streaming. And that's like, how 80 to 90% of people that buy an Apple TV are going to use it anyways.
Yeah.
That's how I use it. I don't buy iTunes stuff either.
Yeah. There are a lot of people that do though.
There are.
I don't know what those numbers are, but I know people that actually do strictly buy their movies and shows off of iTunes.
And
so there's that.
For them, they might need the storage space, but at the same time, chances are you're only downloading one thing at a time. And they can have kind of a streaming model where it's like it downloads whatever you're watching. And then when you start watching something else, it erases it, like kind of a cache for the content that you own. So you wouldn't need a big amount of storage space for that either. Like they just need to be a bit more intelligent about how they're delivering these options to people and acknowledging that streaming is more and more the future of the media industry and coming up with an Apple TV that kind of responds to all of these concerns. Something that has just enough storage and a low enough price point that people can say, okay, well, this gives me everything I was looking for, plus iTunes, plus maybe something else. Like, I think they need to add a little more on. And then it becomes a really tempting option because then it's like it gets reframed as a totally different value proposition because then it's like, well, I could get this Roku box, But for like $20 or $30 more, I could get the entry level streaming Apple TV, and it gives me all of these other things plus apps. Like, then it starts to become appealing to people. Not, oh, hey, we released this $300 box.
Right.
It's got an iPad Pro chip in it. You want this, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
exactly.
No. Try again.
So, I mean, what advantages, going back to the Fire TV, I hear that it has ads in it, but what are there any actual advantages of the 4K other than the fact that it's way cheaper?
Yeah.
Is that the only thing it's really competing on?
That's pretty much. Like, it's delivering 4K HDR at a way lower price point. And I think, yeah, it is partially ad-supported.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it does Dolby Atmos, following up on our last week's discussion.
So...
I haven't checked.
I think it does support Atmos, but it doesn't support Dolby Vision HDR. It only supports HDR10. Apple TV supports both, but doesn't support Dolby Atmos, though it will at some point. So, I mean, if you are a cinema enthusiast and you've got like some insane 4K setup at home, you're probably going to want the Apple TV because that gives you everything. The Fire TV is more opinionated. It only supports one of the two competing HDR formats, and it supports Atmos surround sound. So if you have HDR10 and Dolby Vision content, it might not be the box for you because it's only going to support HDR10. It is possible that Amazon could add Dolby Vision support with a firmware update, but I'm not 100% sure on how that works. It might require hardware decoding, in which case it'll never be able to get Dolby Vision. But if that's not the case, then it could feasibly get it at some point, though they haven't said anything about it. So, I mean, if you are an enthusiast, Apple TV is kind of the way to go because it supports everything out of the box, or it will very soon. If you only have HDR10 content and you want to save money, Fire TV is the way to go. But right now, at this point in the market, there's no one device that supports everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are compromises that you may be making. It just depends what your priorities or where your priorities lie.
Yeah, and that's kind of what makes this so frustrating because it's like, there are all these competing formats and some of the devices support some of them don't. And in terms of price point, you've got all of these cheap devices that also mean you might have to compromise. And then you've got this really expensive device that's overpriced that is going to offer all of those options in theory.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like at the end of the day, it really comes down to, do I want all of the support or do I want to save money? And I mean, that's a rough choice to have to make. Because
no kidding.
Yeah, like the Apple TV, it's totally overpriced, and yet it's going to provide all of the options, but it's really expensive. So yeah, it's a rough situation, and I mean, it really kind of underlines the fact that this entire 4K overhaul has been a mess since day one, like. Everything was 4K, 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 buy a 4K TV. There's no content. Now there's kind of some content, but then, oh, gotta buy HDR now. Oh, but there's two different kinds of HDR. Oh, well, which one do you support? The other one. So that's a mess too. And yeah, a lot of people still don't even have 4K TVs. They're still on a 1080p TV that they've had for a few years. So
it's, you know, a lot of people call 4K a gimmick. I mean, do you think that's a fair statement to make?
I think it's undeniable.
It's undeniable that there are benefits. There absolutely are quality benefits with the right panel.
4K is a dramatic
and with HDR
quality upgrade.
HDR,
especially
I would say,
with HDR,
is the big deal here.
Yeah,
when combined with it,
we're basically talking about moving from HD to a Retina display in your house. Like that is the jump in fidelity that you're getting when you switch to 4K. You're getting double the pixels.
Yeah.
So,
but we're not really quite ready to make that transition, because you're saying the content isn't there yet. I mean, I don't know when the hell this is gonna take a long time.
It is.
Like, I really don't.
I mean,
4K is just a luxury at this point.
Yeah.
And
terrestrial broadcasting isn't going to upgrade anytime soon.
No, I mean, the cost alone.
They just spent a ton of money upgrading to 1080p. So it's exponentially more money to get 4K TVs, 4K cameras everywhere. Like, local news stations are not going
to spring
for 4K cameras right now.
And I think my guess, just the way it is going now, I think the transition between 1080 and 4K is going to be a lot slower and a lot longer than the transition, if you remember, when we went from DVD to Blu-ray,
mm-hmm.
right? And DVD is still sold today. Movies still get simultaneously released on DVD and Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's a problem for the studios, because of course they want people to be buying the Blu-ray. They want people to be looking at the movie in the higher quality.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not realistic for a lot of people, because it's like, what am I going to rebuy my entire movie? Like, we've all been through the format wars many times, VHS, DVD.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to rebuy their entire movie collection.
No, of course not. And this is why, I mean, this is part of why Apple is doing such a good job with it. Like, Apple TV issues aside, they're just giving you the 4K upgrade. Like, if you bought something that's 1080p and it suddenly becomes available in 4K on iTunes, you've already got the 4K for free.
I gotta admit, that is
which is huge.
Really, really nice feature.
That's huge. And it almost makes you want to buy iTunes, but at the same time, Netflix, I mean, they're pretty far ahead with 4K. All of their original content is shot in 4K. They release it in 4K.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got that content there for sure. Amazon, same thing, I think.
Yeah, well, because Netflix has their very advanced dynamic streaming
mm-hmm.
technology. Whereas, and I haven't actually compared it side by side, but I've only heard from people that know a lot more about this than I do, that the level of compression in iTunes videos is that the same movie that you would get on iTunes would not look as good in comparison to Netflix.
Wow.
If it was streamed from Netflix. That's what I've heard.
Hmm.
So I haven't, but again, I haven't done a comparison side by side, but it wouldn't surprise me. I think I have less than 10 TV shows and movies in my iTunes iCloud. And they don't look all that great. I mean, they're okay. I mean, they're good, what you may call good enough for most people. But for me, I mean, in comparison to Blu-ray, there is no question the Blu-ray is noticeably less grainy and the colors are better. It's just, there's no contest.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really an interesting time. You've got all of these competing things. You've got all these price points, things that are too expensive, things that aren't expensive but compromise on all kinds of things. It's hard to know what to actually go for right now.
I mean, it's got to be maddening we're both very technologically savvy and keep up to date with this stuff. Can you imagine the average person how confusing all of this must be?
Yeah.
Like trying to grasp
the
4K alone and HDR. Like, what? Try explaining HDR to somebody.
Yeah, like just walking into a Best Buy, it's kind of overwhelming. Like, half the 4K TVs aren't HDR. And then the ones that are, they might not even support both formats. Some of them might be HDR.
Is that really an issue, though? I mean,
it is.
Because I thought one version of HDR was, I think it was at HDR 10. I thought that was the more common one that the movie studios were adapting.
No, I think the movie studios are going for Dolby Vision.
Dolby Vision, okay. So really, you do want something that supports both, just in case.
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, you're missing out.
Yeah, it's weird right now.
I haven't even looked at the prices of 4K HDR TVs in general now. I don't know if they've come down enough
They have considerably.
Reasonable.
So like right now I could pick up a 50-inch 4K HDR Vizio TV for $798.
Okay, so that's a good price, but I mean, Vizio is what? You got to buy that online. Like, nobody sells that locally, that brand, right?
Costco does.
Do they?
Yeah.
Hmm.
They've got it. They've got the sale price too.
Yeah.
So you could pick it up from Costco.
I doubt you could get a Sony or a Samsung for that price.
No.
I'm pretty sure those are over $1,000.
No, the cheaper ones are selling for like $899,
$999. Mm. So that's not bad.
But that's like last year's model, right. 2 years ago's model.
And who knows if that supports both the HDR standards that you're talking about, right?
Yeah,
so that's like that, a whole nother thing.
That's the tricky thing, right? Like, you see these TVs that are advertised as HDR, but they might not have both formats.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it really complicated. Luckily, the Vizio one does support both. It's their new XLED Plus panel. So it supports both forms of HDR, which is nice. So, I mean, if you want to get into 4K and HDR, that would be the TV to buy if you're sensitive to price point. But, yeah. It's just kind of a mess with all of these things. And it's not clear if it's ever going to clean up anytime soon. TV shows, those aren't going to be 4K for a long time. It will on streaming services, like Netflix shows, they'll be 4K. But then stuff you watch won't be, like live TV won't be for a long time.
Yeah. And older movies, aren't they just upscaled to 4K anyway?
Yeah. Yeah, most
I mean,
films,
maybe they'll look a little better, but...
Like, most films are shot in 2K, and then, yeah, they upscaled them, but the fact that they start with the original 2K version, they're going to be a lot sharper than the scaled-down version. Because you're starting from the original film reel that's way more defined, bigger aspect
ratio.
Well,
because there's this trend that's been happening. I've been seeing more and more Blu-ray movies where they've been re-released, and you see that they do these incredibly high resolution 4K scans of original, like interpositive, you know, celluloid film.
Yeah.
But I think where it gets confusing is that it's not like it's scanned in 4K in order so that they can capture every possible detail off the film to clean it up properly. It's not 4K. It's just they do it at that high res so that they can, so that the end result is better.
Yeah, exactly.
So that they can clean up the film and make it look better. But anyways, we're running out of time here. So where do you think this stuff is going to go? Do you think, I mean, is it unrealistic to hope that Apple will drop the price of the Apple TV in the next year or so?
I think we will see them do that. I think the sales are not going to be what they were hoping, and I think they're going to have to basically shift gears. They're also going to have to make a much bigger effort for tvOS because tvOS 11 added basically nothing. No new features.
Well, there's a dark mode.
Oh, wow. There's a dark mode.
Hey, that's important.
Like, and then there's the whole TV app thing, but that hasn't really gone anywhere. We finally got it in Canada, but it's not really that useful because it boots you to whatever app hosts the content.
Yeah, that's just stupid.
It doesn't pull
it
in.
It's really half-baked.
It's really half-baked. And yeah, like they just need to step up their game. If they're really serious about TV, like we need better hardware, cheaper, better updates to the software. Yeah. Like,
I'm not excusing it. I'm not saying the Apple is faultless here, but I'm sure getting the agreements between all the content providers to get them to agree what that content experience will be like in the Apple TV app. You know, I'm sure that's not easy either, but. You know, the thing is that we put Apple on a pedestal. We hold them up to this higher standard because we know, like, traditionally they have the negotiating power, and they've done really good deals before in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of how monumental it was to remove DRM from music in the iTunes store.
That was big.
Right?
And then everyone else followed suit.
So that was a big deal. So I think that's why sometimes it's, you know, it can be easy to become disappointed because we hold Apple to this higher standard that, you know, in comparison to other companies. So we expect them to do more. We expect them to do better. And they clearly are lagging behind. And I think, you know, you see analysts making comments about Apple's shortcomings in the TV market. And I think they're absolutely right. And I think, like, you know, where is this new Apple TV set? I mean, there were rumors that Apple was going to actually make a TV, but they weren't really clear on what, like, what would that look like, right? Because it is kind of a mess.
Yeah. I don't know.
And the content deals are a big part of this. I think that is really one of the, probably the largest impediments. Because Apple, yes, by tomorrow, Apple could have a really fantastic piece of hardware, but it wouldn't go anywhere because of the stranglehold of cable companies and the stranglehold that these studios and providers have over that stuff. And everybody wants to do their own thing. And they're of course, naturally, they're looking out for themselves. Like Disney, and going back to that conversation we had about Disney, that they want to start their own streaming service. Everyone is in it for self-preservation. And you can't really fault them for that. But for consumers, that really makes our experience crappy.
Yeah.
It makes it crappy.
Yeah, I was talking about this the other day. It's like the whole thing with Star Trek Discovery. It's on CBS All Access, but outside of the U.S., in Canada, everywhere else, it's on Netflix. Same day. Here, because Bell has an exclusive deal for Star Trek stuff.
Sorry, it's on Netflix? Don't you mean Crave TV?
Everywhere other than Canada, it's on Netflix.
Okay, got it.
But because Bell here has a deal for all the Star Trek content, here, it's on Crave TV, and we get it a day after it airs on CBS All Access. So it airs Sundays. Crave TV doesn't get it till Monday, which is bullshit.
So everybody, what? Because why is that the end of the world?
It's not the end of the world, but it creates friction.
Sure.
A ton of friction.
I agree. It shouldn't be the case.
This is why people are still pirating.
Right.
Because people just want access to the content that they want when they want it. They don't want to deal with these arbitrary restrictions and content deals. They don't care. They just want to watch what they want to watch.
And I'm not going to, I won't excuse piracy because there's no reason for that. However, I can understand from their perspective, like you're saying, why somebody would want to do that. Because you're right. Because ultimately consumers, like, we don't care about the bureaucracy. That's not our problem.
No.
Okay. We want the content when it's supposed to be out right away and on our own terms.
Yeah.
And the fact that they've refused, they've made strides in this, but they've refused to do this. There's still so many hurdles involved.
Yeah.
And then not to mention, like you said, I mean, country restrictions and stuff not showing up when it's supposed to show up because whatever reason, it's just, I wish they could just figure this out. Like, can't they just get together and figure this shit out?
Sounds so simple, but no. I don't know. Business deals, whatever. But ultimately, people find a way around it. And until they fix their shit, people will continue to find ways around it. There's a reason HBO shows are the most pirated content ever. Because trying to get HBO in any country other than the US is a real shit show. It's all right here, mostly. But in a lot of countries, you can't even get HBO. And in other countries, you have to be with a specific cable provider. And here in Canada, we can't even use HBO Go. Because again, Bell has deals and such. They suck.
That shouldn't even be allowed.
Yeah,
the fact that they have a stranglehold on everything.
It has.
You know that radio, the iHeartRadio app here.
Yeah.
It's run by Bell.
Oh, of course it is.
Right.
So what? You can only use it if you're a Bell customer?
Well, no, but it's it restricts the content, right? Because it's restricted to like all the... Like the thing is Bell that a lot of people in Canada know this, but if you're outside, you wouldn't know this, but Bell as a telecom is also a multimedia company. They own all these properties, right? Yeah. And they own a bunch of radio stations too. So like you open the iHeartRadio app and like there's no way for me to just listen to any radio station I want. Like I can't even listen to any US content. It's only the Bell Media properties, right? So it's like, what?
Lovely.
You know, and it's, I'm maybe on the one hand, you could argue, yeah, more Canadian content is a good thing, but taking that choice away from me, that's just infuriating.
Yeah. And
I want choice as a consumer.
Exactly.
I don't want you to tell me what I can listen to.
Yeah.
Or what I can or cannot watch.
Exactly.
That's not up to you.
And that is the fundamental issue at question here. And it's why people turn to piracy. Because they are not giving customers the options that they want. They are dictating what you can watch, when you can watch it. People don't want that. They just want the content, period.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to deal with your stupid arbitrary geo restrictions or content boundaries or timed exclusives or whatever. Like, nobody wants that. Okay. Nobody is out here going, yes, give me the show that I want 2 days later because I live in Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody is asking for that. And the more you do it, the more people will pirate because it's just easier. The best streaming service on the planet is downloading torrents. True fact. Because you can just say, I want that. And you download it and it's yours and you can watch it.
So really
right
people
away.
Want that experience in a legal way.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, it's kind of hilarious in 2017 we're still talking about this issue.
Yeah. Well,
like nothing, almost nothing has moved.
Because they are determined to hold on to their
corporate interests.
Yeah. They're determined to hold on to their ideas of whatever these media businesses are supposed to be. And they're basically playing by old rules. They're not looking at the market and what the market actually needs. They're going by what they think the market is. And it's just not that anymore. People just want content right now.
In the end, I'd like to think that in the end, anyways, they'll hopefully figure this out when their bottom line gets affected by this in a more substantial way.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll get to that point, but things
I don't
are
know
changing.
If we will.
The TV market is certainly changing. I mean, Netflix has been a game changer, right?
Yeah.
And I think Netflix will continue to, I mean, you can look, there is proof now.
Mm-hmm.
Look year over year at how many people are cutting the cord, how many people are dropping their cable TV subscriptions to go streaming only, whether it's Netflix or Amazon Prime or iTunes, whatever.
Yeah.
They're cutting the cord and more people are doing that every year.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a wake-up call.
Yeah. Yeah, like you just can't play by these rules anymore. People just want the maximum amount of content that they can get by paying a flat fee and be able to watch it whenever they want.
Yeah.
That's the Netflix model. That model is succeeding. And if you ignore it, you will be destroyed. Period. Maybe not today, but very soon. The streaming era. Get with the times.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there. and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.